I use my outside voice because I have no choice. The barn that I was raised in was constructed out of noise, and now I'm all torn up because my buttercup up and gone and left me. Said she finally had enough, left me here.
I like fun describing how things break apart. That would be the undefeatliest, unbreakpartable They Might Be Giants. Now on their 36th year of making music, as usual with the lyrics of They Might Be Giants, you can find yourself landing on any line and pondering it for way too long. In my case, it was the flashcard with the word Steltify, because in their nearly four decades of song, they've had their share of descriptive cards in the past. The card with the cartoon nurse in 1994's Destination Moon, the postcard with the stamp and Words Are Like, the card tricks in the I'm a Coward video, not to mention the card mentioned here.
Now you've been maxing out my card. Gave me bad credit, buy me gifts with my own hands.
There'll be in their Dial-A-Song cover of Destiny's Child. More on Dial-A-Song in a moment. And of course, the giant cue cards for sing-alongs that they first launched in their 1980s shows of spectacle, along with a papier-mâché monster mitts and French bread fencing. As they told CBC in 1990...
We learned pretty early on that the audience generally respond much more to whatever we did live on stage. I mean, you could stand there going, you know, kink, and people would be much more excited than the most complicated thing on tape.
Will there be giant cue cards with the word Steltify when they perform tonight at Bronson Center? Will they say kink? John Flansburgh from They Might Be Giants is with me in studio. John Linnell is somewhere behind him on the highway. We don't know. John.
Yes, he is. He's trailing somewhere, hopefully scanning the dial for this interview. Alan, thank you so much for the, you know, short of being on the Gilbert Gottfried podcast, I can't imagine a more complete and thorough introduction. That was extremely thoughtful and also highly produced, considering you're a one-man band there.
Oh, yeah. It's completely solo. Are there still cue cards for sing-alongs?
There are no, not in our touring show. On occasion in recent, it wasn't that recent. We have had shows where if you brought an acoustic guitar, you could play a horse with, we would play A Horse with No Name, and we would play, I'm trying to think of the other song, we would play Mr. Tambourine Man with all the verses on, from the Bob Dylan version.
No, people had to stay in their seats, right? They didn't all rush the stage.
These were all standing venues. So what we would do is we would have, sometimes we would be in venues that had balconies, and all the guitar people with the guitars would be in the balcony. And we tried to do it on a regular basis. It's a it's actually quite a majestic thing to hear just the dull kind of like thrum of of 75 acoustic guitars all in relative tuning tune. Proximity to one another. But you know, it sounds like something. You know, it sounds like sort of like putting a beehive on your head.
When I... Exactly the acoustic feel you always longed for.
Well, yeah, it's exciting at first.
But it has that element of danger that sometimes that they might be giants shows would have when there were the monster mitts and the French loaves of bread fencing.
Well, we were trying to take the element of danger out of it with The Horse with No Name because that only has two chords. So
exactly.
It's very,
you're not going to go wrong with that. Have you figured out why a word like stultify sticks in your mind, how that word ends up making the cut for the song?
Well, the song... the lyric to that song is very much a sort of a straightforward breakup kind of a song. You know, it's kind of a, you know, she left me and she wasn't particularly nice about it kind of lyric.
Yes. Your buttercup.
Yeah. I mean, I think it plays on, somebody was sort of querying us about the nature of the lyric of that song because there's so many things in the song that are sort of kind of country bumpkin-y kind of references.
The barn that you grew up in. Buttercup, et cetera.
I'm not really sure what that impulse comes from, but I think a lot of it is just, it was sort of, we don't write a lot of love songs, although we do. I mean, I think probably the closest we get are sort of a lot of the revenge topics of like Elvis Costello songs or, you know, and sometimes they're just like straight up romantic, you know, positive love songs. But I think with that one, once there was one thing that seemed kind of country bumpkin-y, it just kind of kept on going.
But the flashcard with stultify, that's not country bumpkin-y at all.
That's true. I don't know where the stultify came. I mean, I guess it's just about the sort of how confounded you can feel when you've been ditched.
If I take you even further back here to another card lyric, this is about picking another card from the back of the pile. Look of recognition is washing over him now.
I've heard that song a million times. that is John Linnell's old band, The Mundanes. That was their one 45. They were sort of a power pop band out of Providence, Rhode Island, and the songwriter was a fellow named John Andrews, who now you might, if you were an avid follower of Beavis and Butthead or King of the Hill or any sort of Mike Judge production, you would probably recognize his name as one of the producers of the show. He worked with him for a long time. He's a big deal in TV animation and television in general in LA now, but he was the songwriter
when Linnell was in the Mundanes. Do you think that he had a sense of the kind of band he wanted to be in eventually? Do you think that
he had a very strong sense of the band he wanted to be in at the time? I mean, we actually formed They Might Be Giants very much at you know, people who are friends with bands or people who are in bands are probably very familiar with the idea of like the little brother band of, you know, they'll be literally, sometimes they are literally the little brothers, or it'll be like someone in the band who has a very specific passion for, you know, Prez Prado songs and wants to do their Prez Prado project on the side. They Might Be Giants was very much the little brother band of the Mundanes. John was brought in as a sideman, and it was already a group of friends who were like the inner circle of the band. And, he learned a lot. I sort of vicariously learned a lot about being, you know, what bands did. I mean, even down to like, how to not lean over with your rear end facing the audience.
I see. Okay.
Which
all
is
right.
something, you know,
posture
an invaluable
yeah.
piece of information for anyone who's going to be on stage.
Study that tonight at the right. Bronson Center. Watch
right,
how,
right. Watch how we avoid
stage.
Completely, you know, bending over. But you know, they were a really successful band, and but they also were trying to sort of going for the brass ring. I mean, it was a big band, and they needed to kind of keep moving forward, or it would not be worthwhile for all the people involved. Like, they needed to get signed, they needed to be real, and they needed to make money, and they had a PA and lights and all this stuff, and they all moved to New York to make it big, and those kinds of things. Sort of, I think they just changed the energy of a band. You know, yeah. you have to kind of focus on a different trajectory. I mean, basically you're saying, like, we are ambitious. We want to make it in this. We want to get somewhere with this project. And I think that kind of informed John and me in the sense that we wanted to sort of free ourselves from...
You did not want that.
We did not. Well, we just felt like, you know... Maybe there's another way to do it. And I have to say, you know, just recently, yesterday morning, the founder of a band called The Residents, who are a band from San Francisco, just passed away. And I can't say how much the existence of the band The Residents influenced They Might Be Giants just as a construct. Mm. I mean, they were a faceless band that did not tour at the time.
Yeah.
And the idea of simply making music that was not... You know, clearly in the most direct way, ego driven. You know, it wasn't about creating, I mean, they created a mysterious persona, but there wasn't much to know about there.
And I mean, this is what is so interesting about you every step of the way is that it has been going outside the system, outside of the normal, for lack of a better term, ego driven way of making music, including the Dial-A-Song feature, where, I mean, for people unfamiliar with this, people can call up an answering machine, hear a new song or cover you created, like the, mm-hmm. the Bills cover that we played a little bit of there. In 1987, the New York Times did a piece where it was explained, and they wrote, "The group now attracts a nationwide audience, long distance. People can tell us immediately after hearing it what they thought of the song," Mr. Flansburgh said. "When they start hanging up in the middle," Mr. Linnell added, "you know the song's not working. Last Friday at Dorinka, the basement apartment turned by a private club on the lower east side, Mr. Flansburgh introduced a relatively new song, and a listener interrupted him, 'I heard it already on the message.'"
Well, there you go.
He
didn't need to hear it again.
Yeah, he's done.
Yeah.
He heard that already.
I'm out.
Why'd you bring back the Dial-A-Song?
As an aside, the other night, we've been traveling across Canada, and I'm not sure what city we were in, but we were playing in like all the aisles were clear, because it was like a theater setup, and we started playing the song Birdhouse in Your Soul, which is probably like one of our best known songs. And right as it started, someone in the middle aisle just tore out of the room, just left the theater. And I thought, you know, what an interesting time to split.
I know that
it's
one.
Like, it's like, I don't need to hear this one. I'm tired of this band. I'm, you know, I don't know why I spent, you know, $27 on this. They're playing their hit. What a bunch of sellouts.
Another mental note. Do not watch when you leave the Bronson Center because the band will notice.
You're free to leave anytime. It just was so notable because it's like I couldn't think of any part of the show that would be least likely to generate somebody leaving. But there have been a lot of orderly aisles kept, so it's very easy to keep track of people. But as you were saying, I've already forgotten the Dial-A-Song.
I only have a minute left. Why bring back the Dial-A-Song?
Oh, well, I mean, it's very, you know, of course, like everything in the 21st century, it's all very different, yet in some ways kind of the same. I mean, it's, you know, we're not, you know, we're sort of advocates for what we do. We're not the most, we're not like a stock band. We kind of have to find our audience. And it was just a way to keep things sort of hyperactive on social media. And that seems like the only way you're going to get any traction these days is sort of having an ever-present, ever-refreshing you know, profile. So it was, it seemed like an apt moment in the culture.
It's I am so happy to hear that one can still dial in and get these
oh, yeah.
songs.
Well, and you can also, you know, get it online. It's on YouTube and
everywhere you go. And at the Bronson Center tonight, where you cannot, there is no balconies to bring your guitars to.
No.
But I do have two tickets to give away. If you can tell me the name of the band that John Linnell was once in that I played a clip of, All in a Day at cbc.ca. Email us by 4 p.m. John, thank you so much.
This is the most in-depth interview I've done in 10 minutes. I feel like more hard information about They Might Be Giants has been dispensed in these brief seconds than hours on most stations.
This is thank you for 36 years of music.
Like concentrate.